WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're taking a look at a local theater production with a fresh take on a cult classic.
Hi, I'm sorry. Technically, I did not kill Heather Chandler, but hey, who am I trying to kid, right? I just want my high school to be a nice place. Amen. Did that sound bitchy?
That was actress Winona Ryder, of course, in a short clip from the 80s cult classic black comedy film Heathers, which also featured a young Christian Slater and Shannon Doherty. Now, young actors with the Florida Repertory Theater's Conservatory Program are performing an off-Broadway rock musical adaptation of the classic film called Heathers the Musical. The show delivers a satirical take on issues relatable to young people, including the often malicious social hierarchies that can dominate high school life, bullying, violence, suicide and empathy, also some homicide. In our current era of school mass shootings and bullying, the play's themes can take on a deeper meaning. Joining me now is the production's director, Cody Jones. He's also the Florida Rep's education director. Jones holds a master's of fine arts degree in acting, along with a secondary education and acting bachelor's degrees. His career has a long history in education and theater. For the past 10 years, he's acted and directed professionally all over the Chicago area and the Midwest. He served as artistic director for Shawnee Summer Theater in Indiana and the stage at Island Park in Fargo, North Dakota. He also served as resident artist for Flint Youth Theater and taught theater to kids at Chicago Public School System, Arts for All, Little Buds Theater, and the American Theater Company. Cody Jones, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
And we're also joined by Jessie Mazzari. She plays the role of Martha in the Florida Rep's currently running production of Heathers, the musical. And she has been performing with them for quite some time, since you were 9 years old, right?
Yeah, since about 2009.
All right. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
And we're also joined in studio by the Florida Rep's Jason Parrish, who is wrapping up his 13th season with the company, for which he serves as associate director. We'll learn a bit more about Jason later this hour when we explore what theatergoers have to look forward to with the Florida Rep's upcoming 2018-2019 season. Jason, great to have you with us.
Thank you, John.
And as always, I invite listeners to join the conversation with your comments and questions. Connect with our guests by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Cody, I wanted to start off our conversation, you know, just kind of heavy. We just experienced, you know, the Santa Fe shooting in Santa Fe, Texas last week. Back in February, we had the Marjory Stoneman Douglas massacre in Broward County. For those who know the subject matter of Heathers, the story, one might conclude that, you know, these recent tragedies might have had something to do with the decision to perform the show now. But that's not really the case, is it?
Not so much. We actually chose the show months and months before even Parkland happened. Mm. When Parkland did happen and all these other recent ones, Texas included, we would keep having conversations about why are we doing this show? And do we need to be sensitive? Do we need to pull back? Should you know, the question was, should we even keep producing this show, you know, after Parkland?
Right.
And we quickly realized, yes, you know, this is something important. I mean, you know, theater, even using young artists, is more than just entertaining. It's about educating and enlightening our young actors, but also the community around us. And these themes aren't going to go away, and bringing them to light in a different way and using a satirical take with a musical, bringing that content to our community and showing that we need change is something important, something we need to teach our young actors.
And for those who are perhaps unfamiliar with the story, can you give us maybe a brief synopsis about, you know, what's going on and who these characters are that we meet at Westburg High School?
Sure.
Westburg.
Well, so those of us that grew up with the movie, it's very much follows the same themes and plot line, but it's not as dark as the movie, and definitely the language nowhere near that of which the movie has. But you know, it follows the protagonist Veronica Sawyer, who doesn't really know where her place is in life, but also in the high school in which she attends. She doesn't belong to any group, and it's this common misconception that you need to belong to a group to feel safe or to feel connected or to have identity. So she's kind of searching. Where do I fit in? Where do I belong? And in this high school, much like many of which we attended and still have, is divided in these groups with these labels. And she goes through – she makes lots of mistakes and falls in the wrong crowd many times. And she meets a young man who is very messed up and misguided and tries to lead her in his line of violence and using violence as a solution, which we are seeing in some of our high schools, unfortunately. And what happens – and she kind of helps – make a change, not just for herself, but for this entire high school. She makes the right decisions in the end, and tries to lead this high school, to light. And she says, "Listen up, folks, war is over. Brand new sheriffs come to town." Those are some of the lyrics that she uses in the musical at the end. We are done acting like
evil.
We will lay our weapons down. These are lyrics from the musical. Mm. We need to stand up and take these labels off of ourselves, off each other. Be nice to one another. Stand up for one another, be loving, caring human beings.
And Jesse, tell us a bit about your character, Martha. I mean, would it be fair to say she really kind of, you know, embodies the themes of bullying and kind of showing how these, you know, cutthroat social hierarchies that still exist in high schools can be, you know, really hurtful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's kind of like that classic misfit character. She's a heavier set girl. She's quiet, but she has the most beautiful, kind soul in the show. I mean, she's one of the only people that kind of stays pure and good throughout all of this. And she's Veronica's best friend, and Veronica kind of leaves her behind at one point to kind of try and fit in with the crowd. And throughout all of it, Martha really tries to remain positive and happy, but eventually just kind of all gets to be a lot. And she ends up taking some actions that where there could have been other solutions, but ends up kind of realizing that she's pretty happy with who she is, even if other people don't see that. Mm-hmm. But I definitely do think that she kind of embodies what a lot of high schoolers are going through, with not always feeling like they really fit in and not really knowing where to turn.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and as Cody kind of expressed earlier, folks like us kind of grew up with this movie. Mm-hmm. Was this something that you were familiar with before the musical?
Well, I had heard of the musical and I had listened to the soundtrack a little bit, but I hadn't really seen it, obviously. And I really fell in love with the music and the story. And I saw that the movie was on Netflix, and so I watched it, and I loved the movie. And then that's kind of how I started my love for the musical as well. So it came from the movie. Yeah.
Excellent. And Cody, did you feel like you were maybe taking a little bit of a risk in tackling this show? Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked. Sure. You know, I this is live theater, we have to. There's always going to be risk with everything, and I think the biggest risk for me was is this content appropriate for these kids? And I realized that it's not only is it appropriate, it's more than that. This is stuff they're living in their own lives. These young actors, they're in high school, playing high school students, going through the exact same issues. Maybe not as the highest stakes as we reach in Heather's, but they're going through these same types of problems. And our rehearsal process was very different for this one in handling this type of content. And we had one-on-ones, we had check-ins, we had group discussions for every single rehearsal. We did a lot of research. We had people come in and talk with us. We talked a lot about depression and teen suicide. We talked about violence in the schools. Everyone was really given a voice. We had an assignment where our ensemble could actually decide where they were going to fit in, because everyone in the show is labeled into a clique or a group.
Yeah.
And they got to decide. And we talked about these groups and why are we labeled like this, and had these discussions. So it was done in a safe, productive way. And, there's always risk. And I think that's a part of the teaching element with these kids, is teaching them that there's more to theater than just entertainment. There's something much, much more important at stake. There's a message, something we can communicate to the world.
And I watched it last night. I was sitting in the audience with an audience mostly full of teenagers
which is really heartening to see at the Arcade Theater. But no one asked that question 2 years ago when the conservatory program produced Romeo and Juliet. No one asked, are you taking a risk? Because no one thinks about it as a risk. But it struck me last night that it's the content of Romeo and Juliet is actually not that far removed from the content we're dealing with in this. We're just dealing with it in contemporary circumstances. But two kids die in Romeo and Juliet because of this feud. And so it's just looking at the same issues through a different lens and, you know, in this case, through a more contemporary lens. And so it makes us all say, oh, it's based on Heathers. Is that a risk? But truly, there are issues that kids are dealing with in their real lives. Yeah. And so this is sort of therapy in a way for the audience. Again, it struck me last night as that audience of teenagers jumped to their feet in support of their friends who performed beautifully, that they'll walk away from it thinking not just about how exciting it is to see their friends up there, but they'll walk away thinking about the message, which is acceptance. Mm-hmm. And if you are having problems, reach out, talk to someone. There's always a better way than violence.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that a lot of people have – a lot of adults have come up to me and said, how is this material going for you? And, a lot of people have said that sometimes it's odd for teenagers to be doing this, but I think that there isn't a better group of people to be doing this. Because I know that in my school, when Parkland first happened, a lot of people didn't come to school sporadically for the next few days just because of the fear.
Yeah.
And I go to Cypress Lake High School, and we had
Cypress.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Grant. Yeah, it's wonderful. But we had a shooting threat the day after Parkland. And so a lot of us come to school with legitimate fear and worry about it. And I think that it's wonderful that this show really brings that to the forefront and we're able to talk about it in a productive manner.
Yeah. I think it's interesting how, you know, shows like this, or this one particularly, covering this difficult subject matter, but in an accessible way,
mm-hmm.
it still has struggled. The movie is a cult classic now and has been for many years. But back in 1988, it was considered a flop.
Yeah.
And the off-Broadway production that you guys are doing, it was only on for a few months, I think. And then it just kind of went straight to the royalty houses. It didn't tour. Mm-hmm. But is it just resonating really well with local theater companies?
It's crazy. It really is. And with young teens, the kids who did not grow up with this movie are growing up with the musical.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something that's so relevant about these themes that we had back in the 80s that are now just as relevant or actually more relevant with kids now. I mean, most of the kids who are in the musical know every lyric of the musical, never seen the movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's interesting to see that pass on in a different form.
Bryce Kingsley plays the character of JD mm-hmm. in your production, and I was reading a news press article about this, and there was a quote from you talking about sitting Bryce down on day one and really challenging him to consider, you know, the origins of his character's psychological challenges. Is that something that you've kind of asked all these actors to do initially, to really sort of explore their characters, not in a superficial level, but mm-hmm. really get at what their motivations are?
We do that in every production.
Sure.
Age doesn't make any difference to me. We all have a goal and we keep raising that bar and how we show the arc and life of each character, every character. Some of those, we had a lot more one-on-one research and time and character development. And, we have to ask these important questions. We can't just go – we owe it to the subject matter to make sure we do it right. And in a lot of these discussions is, JD is crazy. That's a lot of people – they walk away and they say JD is crazy. We don't have the luxury of just labeling that and moving on. We have to say, why? What happened?
Right.
We talked about nature versus nurture and what happened in this young man's life. And a lot of times – those are hard questions to answer, but it's the duty of any actor, despite any age, to delve into that and deliver the honesty on stage for our audiences.
Yeah. And just a little bit on a lighter note, Jesse, I wanted to get your impression of the costumes. I think for Jason and Cody and I, there might be a twinge of nostalgia there. But the shoulder pads, the big hair.
Yeah.
That had to be kind of fun.
It is so much fun. It is so much color. Because I know with my costume, I have a fat suit that I wear, which is very, very sweaty, but very, very fun. I have that and then like a bright purple pants and a turtleneck sweater that has a big purple triangle down the middle. And my hair is all teased, and it's so much fun. And it's fun to be, like, sitting backstage just having normal conversations but wearing these bright neon colors. And yeah. I love it. I think it's so much fun.
We sat down at a production meeting, and we have some amazing designers on this show. And but still in their younger, earlier 20s, maybe mid-20s, and the costume designer, who's phenomenal, Jacqueline, she said, I wonder what this would have really looked like back then, or felt like, or something like that. And I said, well, allow me to elaborate.
Yeah, right.
Let's not forget, this is not a period piece just yet.
No.
But thinking about it also in that context of the 80s, does the time period play a crucial role? And by that I mean, like, do you think that this story has to take place then? Because I'm thinking about, you know, when we were growing up in that time, this was, you know, before Columbine, before, you know, school shootings were anything remotely like the norm.
Yeah.
Does that matter, do you think?
I don't think so. I really don't. It's more relevant now. Like you said, this stuff didn't happen back. I mean, Columbine was kind of the trigger for most of this to happen. So when this movie came out, it was probably this hyperbolic idea, absurd idea. And now it's much more real.
Yeah, yeah. The musical numbers in the show, I mean, are really amazing. Just as an example, again, and, you know, fans of the film who maybe haven't seen it are going to know exactly what this reference is. But I was sitting in my boss's office 2 days ago, and we were listening to a musical number in the show called My Dead Gay Son.
Yeah.
And just laughing hysterically. And it felt so inappropriate.
But, yes.
Yeah. But in the best way.
Yeah. But in a weird way, it wasn't. You know?
Well, and that's the thing about this musical. It disguises these important things in humor and satire and fun and maybe a little spectacle at times.
Yeah.
And then it is easier for us to digest as human beings. It doesn't alienate us. A lot of people see these important themes, and this isn't, you know, Samuel Beckett. It's not thrown in your face and you just don't know how to react. It gives you the time to feel, and a lot of that comedy kind of drifts off in each number or within the show, and then you do kind of have to confront these themes, you know, in a more accessible way.
And I think that's why the time period, setting it in the 80s when it was written, does help.
Mm-hmm.
If it were set now and played in a high school now, I think it would have a much different feeling. It would have a much different resonance than if you put it on through the lens of the time period, the costumes, the big hair, so that you can play up the satire of it and get your message in that way. Otherwise, it might be too much to take.
Yeah, it might not be a comedy anymore.
Yeah. Well, is that – I mean, is that something that you've worried about? I mean, because I know it just premiered last night, so, you know, you've only gotten one night of feedback yet. But I'm wondering if there are people who – you're worried that folks might just, like, misinterpret this and take the satire as almost making light of something very serious as opposed to serving as a scathing indictment of some of these issues.
That's – you know, that's there's always a little worry about things like that, but it wasn't – It wasn't – I was worried on how well they would take the information in and how they'd be able to stomach it. And I couldn't – I can't tell you how relieved I was sitting in the back. I was just like almost in tears about – because you can say a show is good before it opens or successful or however you want to quantify that. But it's all on how the audience takes the message in. That's where if it's good or not. Mm-hmm. The audience is the other side of that collaboration. And the way our house took it in last night was just remarkable. We were all relieved and excited that, you know, the goals that we set for ourselves and how this information would be communicated were achieved and then some. I mean, the feedback we're getting is crazy. We weren't expecting it to be this big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And worth noting for me that – you know, we're talking about content. We're talking about the musical itself, but the performances in it. I hadn't seen it before last night's opening performance, and having been at the reps for 13 years, I've seen some of the young actors in this musical since they were toddlers in our summer camp,
right.
And I was incredibly proud of all of them, Jesse in particular. But they're giving really excellent performances. Some of these, some of their singing instruments are unbelievable to me. They were really, really impressive, and I think that helps everything as well. It's put on well, and just the voices and the actors. I sat all weekend long watching unified auditions, and any of these young actors could would have done very well at that. Mm-hmm. Would have competed well.
Well, kudos.
Thank you.
And Susanna Toko is listening to us down at the Everglades Wonder Gardens in Bonita. She writes, "So happy to hear this interview today. Mm-hmm. I think art will help us open up dialogue." Well said, Susanna. I think that's kind of what we've been getting at with the conversation. And of course, other listeners can join us as well. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the actors in this production are from the Florida Reps Conservatory program. As the education director, what's that all about?
Oh, the conservatory program is basically what we call the professional experience. We want to offer something to the students who have been with us for a while, and even new students who are ready to take it to the next level. Most of our students, especially in the conservatory, are looking at this as a potential career.
Yeah.
It's a way for us to help foster their honing their instruments and giving them that experience that helps elevate their performances and their training. We bring in folks. It's not everybody for these is local. Our choreographer was a Rockette.
Oh, wow.
She did the national tour of Addams Family. Our music director, Roz, is amazing. She she spent her whole career in academia with musical theater, working with college students. We try to bring in different people when we can to help keep challenging these students in every conservatory. And our designers, our production team, I mean, this is treated exactly like a professional production. And it really elevates. We go by equity rules.
Yeah.
We do everything. And when I came in a couple years ago, I came from a professional background. My whole career is back then, and I was really excited about this program because to me we don't have to change things. We don't have to lower the bar, especially for the talent that this area delivers. And we can just keep raising the bar and treat it just like professional experience. We did Metamorphosis, which is a Mary Zimmerman play. It's done in a pool. A couple of colleagues said, "You're crazy doing that with high school students."
Yeah.
Then they saw the show and they're like, "I'm so glad you did that with high school students."
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's we got to keep the bar high because the talent's high.
And Jesse, how long have you been in the conservatory program?
I did the very first conservatory production. Before it was kind of divided into like an older student conservatory and then a younger student. I was in the first younger student. We did Sleeping Beauty Junior. So it's come a little bit of a ways from
sure.
that.
Sure.
And you were wonderful in it.
Thank you very much. So that was back in like 2010. And then I've done it every year since then, except for 1 year. But I've done it every single year. And I was in Metamorphosis. And that was such an insane experience. We did the show in like 2.5 weeks over the summer. And then I was also in Cody's first conservatory at the Rep, Peter and the Starcatcher, which was so much fun. But yeah, I just think that conservatories kind of jumped to a new level of an expectation since then. So, yeah.
And Cody, I know, even before coming to the Florida Rep, I mean, your experience has been this, you know, perfect blend of education and professional acting. And I'm kind of wondering what draws you towards the education side of it.
Oh, the idea of passing something down. I mean, there's always more than just what you're doing, to me anyway, in that moment. And when you can pass something down and I still act. I try to do one show a year so I can keep fresh and I can keep learning and I can keep passing that down.
Yeah.
There's just something about that passion that you have as an artist and being able to bestow that in others and see them blossom from it and elevate themselves and even elevate where you were professionally, you know, and watching them go on and even do bigger and better things. It's an amazing investment. It really is.
Well, I've been, researching the Florida Reps, programs and opportunities, reaching an impressive 35,000 young people and families each year. I mean, that's That's a lot.
Yeah.
But I was really impressed to also see the age range. I mean, you have some classes or, you know, educational offerings that are geared towards people as young as 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
What on earth can you teach a toddler?
There's more to than than actor training, right? Mm-hmm. You can teach communication and group.
Social skills.
Yeah, team building. Mm-hmm. There's so much more. Social skills is huge, especially when you're young and learning how to leave the nest and be in a group and work with others. And so we focus on those things. It's more of a creative dramatics form of arts education. And so we range from that all the way up to our conservatory. We have summer camps, which sell out every summer. We're excited about having those come up here in a week.
Yeah.
we have spring camp, winter camp that we partner with the Alliance for the Arts over there on McGregor. We do master classes. We have TYA. Theater for Young Audiences, where we have acting interns come in, and I go out to Unifieds and to colleges and cast 6 acting interns that come in with the focus of doing this year 3 touring shows that go to a middle school, an elementary, and a high school, so we can go out in the community, go out in the schools, and reach those students that way as well. And then those acting interns are also fostered and mentored through other opportunities at the Photo Rep, and can even be seen on the main stage as well.
Yeah, I mean, and you're even bringing, you know, some of these age-appropriate theater productions into schools, you know.
It's not all Heathers. there's many other things.
And you know, the Photo Rep offers classes for adults as well?
Not currently. It's something we've done in the past and something we're looking at for the future as well. So.
Okay. And what about summer camp offerings? You know, I noticed a lot of stuff at this point has been, the enrollment period's closed off. But there are some things that are still available. Is there anything that you'd want to highlight as far as what's going to be going on this summer?
Yeah. Unfortunately, our summer intensives, which is for the ages 8 and up, are sold out at this time. But that doesn't mean you can't come see the productions. So get on our website and see when those are. We're doing Singing in the Rain, Willy Wonka, High School Musical, and we're opening with Addams Family in a couple weeks.
All right.
So it'll be a great time if you didn't get in this year to at least come see the performance and see the work that we do and the process that gets us there. We do have Mini Stars, which is our creative dramatics, our younger offerings, ages 5 to 8. That is available. There's a couple of those that are sold out. But get on our website because we do have 7 to 10 slots, I think, still available for that as well. So, and then a Chorus Line. Chorus Line is our next conservatory production, like Heather's. That's ages 15 to 20. And we're holding auditions for that next Tuesday. We saw slots available. We're still open to schedule slots. Please come on out. There's more information on our website about that as well. And a Chorus Line will perform the second weekend of August.
All right, all right. And I don't want to get off on too much of a digression here, but in reading your bio, I see you've had like training in Laban movement analysis?
Laban, yes.
Laban movement analysis. Tell me what that is and how that relates to acting. I just got into like a hyperlink hole. I kept clicking on things, learning about it, and I'm like, this is so interesting.
It's based by an Austrian movement professor, Rudolf Laban. But it's the idea that when you say something, it processes in your mind and you can actually do it. So there's a Laban, what they call movement efforts, or movement energies, like flick or dab or punch or thrust. And you think about what that means and then it goes from the mind and into the body. So you're absorbing it in more of an introductory organic way. So you're not pasting on a character physically. You're actually feeling and mentally processing the character internally, and then it's being seen externally as well.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell I teach that a lot.
But this can be applied to, you know, dancers, public speakers. It doesn't have to be just –
There was a movement in Russia where every administrative assistant secretary years and years ago was required to do that because it's just – it takes the tension out of the body.
Also – stage combat training.
Yes.
That sounds fun and frightening at the same time.
Yeah. more fun than frightening, I promise. There is some stage combat in Heather's as well. And I picked that up in grad school and it seemed to be the golden nugget because that's I've been able to do fight combat and choreography with a lot of the local theaters here. It's been a great way for me to bridge over and make connections and work with others and other colleagues in the area. But it's the combat the safe way. So it's like a dance, you know.
Right.
We're teaching things slowly and then safely.
And Jesse, I know we just started running productions of Heathers the Musical here, but can we expect to see you in some of these upcoming productions that Cody was just highlighting?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll be a junior teaching artist, so I'll be assisting with Adam's Family. And then I'll be auditioning for A Chorus Line, and then Newsies coming up, and then Spring Awakening the next year. So, yeah.
And I figure you got to be done with high school in a year or two. What are your plans?
Yeah, I'm a junior in high school currently. I'm going to be a senior next year at Cypress Lake, and I do intend to go into this as a career. So this summer I'll be putting a short list of schools together and starting to write some college essays and working with Cody on my college auditions for next year.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Great to have all this experience
Absolutely.
Under your belt, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with, any of you, regarding these currently running productions of Heathers the Musical at the Florida Rep?
Oh, please come out and see us. Tickets are still available. We run until Sunday. So we've got 6 more performances left. And yeah, come see what we're doing out there at Florida Rep and see what we're doing with this young talent.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've been speaking with the Florida Rep's Education Director, Cody Jones. He also is directing the Florida Rep's currently running production of Heathers the Musical, featuring actors with the Florida Rep's Conservatory Program. And those, of course, include Jesse Mazzari, who plays the role of Martha in that currently running production. Again, those shows run through May 27th with 7 p.m. performances through Saturday night. There's also 2 2 p.m. matinee performances this Saturday and Sunday. Cody Jones and Jesse Mazzari, it's been great speaking with you. Thanks so much for the time.
Thanks so much
for having us.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, the Florida Repertory Theater's Jason Parrish stays with us, and we're going to be taking a broader view of the Florida Rep, including a preview of what the company is planning for the coming 2018-2019 season. I'm John Davis, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. In the first portion of our show today, we put a spotlight on the Florida Repertory Theater's currently running productions of Heathers the Musical, which is likely one of the final live theater performance opportunities for traditional theatergoers as we head into summer. But folks at the Florida Rep are already hard at work preparing for their 21st anniversary season, which will open this fall. The coming 2018-2019 season includes a broad spectrum of offerings, ranging from classic stories to Pulitzer Prize-winning books adapted to the stage. And I think we've got 2 world premiere plays and full-scale musical performances, so really something for everybody out there. Joining me now for that preview of the coming season at the Florida Rep is actor and interim associate director with the company, Jason Parrish. Jason has spent 13 seasons with the Florida Rep, and he has appeared in more than 30 productions, including The House of Blue Leaves, 12 Angry Men, The Hound of Baskerville, Arsenic and Old Lace, one of my favorites, and 6 years of the David Sedaris classic Santa Land Diaries, which never gets old. I love that one. His directing credits with the Florida Rep include the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, The Fantastics, Journey to Oz, and one of my favorite past performances of recent years, The Shape of Things. He's also acted and directed with the Actors Playhouse in Miami, Riverside Theater in Vero Beach, Theater by the Sea, and the Ocean State Theater Company in Rhode Island. Jason Parrish, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, John.
And, of course, listeners can join the conversation with your comments and questions. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And Jason, before we start exploring what Theater Rep is going to be doing in the coming season, can you give us a little insight into how a professional company like the Florida Rep, you know, even decides how they're going to put a season together? Or does it really kind of depend on the broader mission of the individual company?
I think all of us have a similar process. You can take a look at what has worked for you in the past. But I think it's more about what stories do you want to tell. And Florida Rep's – one of the pillars of Florida Rep's mission is to produce a wide variety of work. And we have a reputation for taking 180-degree turns for our audiences. So we can do something like Cabaret, which is this sensational musical, and follow it up with a world premiere farce called George Washington's Teeth, which is something that we recently did.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look at what are those stories that we want to tell? What are the plays that are really hot right now? You take a look at those. We also like to do a classic every year. And so it's just a matter of finding the right puzzle. It's like putting a puzzle together, I think. And so that's really how it is. And then you have to see what rights are available to you. You know, there's a whole bunch of other things that go on behind the scenes. And for us also, we have an ensemble company, and we like to showcase for our audiences those ensemble members working on a wide variety of plays. So this year it was great to be – for me, for example, I was in a musical, which I haven't been in for quite some time, here at Florida Rep. So I had a lot of people say to me, I didn't know you could sing like that. I didn't know you could sing. Mm-hmm. So it's really wonderful for our audiences to see familiar faces in a wide variety of roles as well. And so we look to – where will we get to showcase those performers as well?
Yeah. And I really think it's interesting the way that you're able to transform the actual theater space, that you're using downtown, because I've seen some of these, like, you know, just over the top musicals with sets, and then like I was mentioning just a minute ago, The Shape of Things, that was like almost like black box style. It was a really intimate performance. The audience was actually on the stage.
Yeah, I can't believe you remember that.
Oh, that was I love that so much.
It was so long ago. We did that as a showcase for our interns that year, and it was really. Interesting, because we didn't have a second space. We didn't have a second performance space back in 2007, I believe. That's 2007.
Oh, gosh. Was it that long
ago? It was that long ago. And so for that intern showcase, I wanted to do that play for quite some time. So, and it was the right four people to do it. And we put the audience up on the stage and turned the arcade stage sort of into a black box. It was a very minimalist performing space. Yeah. And it was really, really successful in the sense that the patrons who did come, I think there were only two or three performances of that particular little showcase.
I came twice.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that. I actually can't believe it, like I said. But yeah, we with the second space now, we're able to, in our main stage season, really diversify as far as the kinds of plays we're able to do. So next year, for example, we'll have Steel Magnolias running on the main stage,
yes,
which we'll talk about later, while a regional premiere. It was supposed to be a world premiere, but another theater picked it up, and so we're very excited for the playwright. It's running in Chicago right now. It's a play called Damascus, a psychological thriller, which takes place in a van. It takes place mostly inside of an airport shuttle van.
Really?
That's driving between Minneapolis and Chicago airports, and it's like a pressure cooker. So that set will be very minimalist and suggestive. I think you'll probably will end up seeing just pieces of the van, maybe a front grill and a steering wheel and the seats, but mostly it'll be benches, I imagine. And we'll lean heavily on projections in that space. So we're able to do sort of those more experimental things in that space now that we have it. And we sometimes do things like that even on the arcade stage.
And we are going to get into the production here. I just wanted to ask one more question here. But I'm sure budget comes into this to some degree. Is there kind of a pretty wide variety of costs when it comes to, you know, what you have to pay for royalties to be able to do a certain show?
Oh, sure. I mean, the royalties, budgets are – they make a – of course, there are some plays that would be off limits to us just because they're too the set would be too big, or
gotcha,
too many moving pieces, mm-hmm, or the cast size is prohibitive. You know, mm-hmm, a lot of older musicals and plays, you sort of take into consideration, okay, what's the personnel cost going to be? If we take, like you said, You Can't Take It With You, or Arsenic and Old Lace had a big cast. And I think it's always important to us to find a way to do those plays every once in a while. Once in a season, you'll see us do something with a bigger cast, like Cabaret this year. Because they're important stories oftentimes. But budget definitely comes into consideration. Just, you know, how big is the set? How many locations is it? How many actors is it going to be? So, yeah, of course, those talks are always going on behind the scenes as you put a season together.
Yeah. Well, let's delve right in. We've got Mark St. Germain's Becoming Dr. Ruth, about, of course, everybody knows Dr. Ruth, you know, the famous sex therapist. But, I mean, this is really about a kind of a lesser known chapter in her life.
Absolutely. Well, it's about her whole life. And we know her as the funny little German woman who is a broadcaster and who says embarrassing things to us because she's a sex therapist. But the story that people don't know is that as a little girl, she fled the Nazis. And then as she, you know, went into her teens and 20s, she was living in Jerusalem and she joined the Haganah and became a scout and a sniper. And then as a single mother moved to America before she was the broadcaster that we know. And so this play, you see her at the age of 69. She's moving from her apartment and it's sort of a moment of reflection for her. And so she talks to the audience and it's a very, very funny play. It's touching. It's empowering. It's sort of harrowing because you realize the uphill climb that this woman had to take and the obstacles that she overcame. And Marc Saint-Germain, who is known for writing these historical plays, and we opened our studio space with Camping with Henry and Tom, which is about Thomas Edison and Henry Ford and President Harding. They actually did go on a camping trip. And so Marc Saint-Germain in that play said, what happened if their car broke down and they got stranded? And so we saw that play. And so Marc Saint-Germain took this story, this Dr. Ruth story, and brought her to life. And he's become close friends with Dr. Ruth, who is still alive and I think 93 years old. Wow. And we hope that she'll be coming down to Fort Myers. She does go see the plays. She knows – I'm told that she has her favorite actresses who have played her. So we're watch for information about that.
Yeah, but, so you will let me know when that
of
happens.
Of course we'll let you know. So that's – it's going to be a wonderful one. It is a one-woman show and we've secured one of the actresses – one of the few actresses who's done it before. So we're very excited for Susan Greenhill. And it's an interesting thing for an actor to do because it's more than just an impersonation. So this actress has to sort of take on that voice and physicality and then make it something that is real enough for us to watch for a few hours. And, you know, the director of it, Chris Clavelli, said to me, he said, you know, she he knows her. He said she read it for me in her living room and it's hilarious. So it's going to sell you tickets. Don't worry.
All right.
So we're excited about that.
And you mentioned already Robert Harling's Steel Magnolias. That's got to be a favorite.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows the film, the 1989 film. And what I don't think people realize about that film is that the film was actually based on a play. And the film expands it and you see Shelby's dad and you see Shelby's whole family, the Julia Roberts and the Sally Field character. It's their story. It's their family story. But in the play, it all takes place in the beauty salon. So it's all in Truvy's beauty salon. And there are only six women. It's just those six women. And it really is a beautiful story of the power of friendship and the power of love and how these women come together to rally for one another in a time of tragedy. It's very funny. It's very touching. And then it pulls the rug out from under you. And it really is remarkable to watch six actresses become these women and to go through what they go through. It'll be live on stage hairdressing. So I'm sure we'll have a working beauty salon with running water and hair dryers. And, you know, the actress who will be playing Truvy will have to learn how to do some of those things. And the actress playing Annelle will have to learn how to do hair. And a couple of the actresses will be shampooed every night on stage. It'll be a working beauty salon. But it is just this beautiful story about Southern women and the power of their friendship.
Yeah, yeah. And we did did talk a bit about Damascus. I really can't wait for that one. It really seems to be something new and different.
Yeah, it is. And we just closed our fifth annual Play Lab series, which is we've for 5 years now been doing a new play festival. And Damascus was read a year ago, May 2017. It was read as part of our six-play reading festival. And it was one of two plays we chose to give a premiere to. And then after we chose it, a theater in Chicago picked it up. So it actually just opened over the weekend in Chicago at a place called Straw Dog Theater. And it's going very well. And it's a story about two very different people being forced together into a pressure cooker of a situation, and there's been a terrorist attack at the airport. A bomb has gone off, and it really opens up a dialogue about the baggage we bring, our assumptions we bring about particular groups of people. In this group, in this particular case, it's about Islamic extremism, and it really turns on its head our perceptions of what a terrorist is, and it's just truly, truly fascinating, and it has some really interesting stagecraft. There'll be really interesting set and three remarkable actors, and it's in our studio space. It'll make it feel like you're in the van with them as this is unfolding. Can't say enough good about that play.
Yeah. We're taking a look at the upcoming 2018-2019 season for the Florida Repertory Theater. It'll be their 21st anniversary season. And Associate Director Jason Parrish is with us right now as we get that preview. You listeners can join our conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 877-428-8255. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And a Christmas Carol is coming, and I was thinking about this, and I'm like, okay, everybody knows the Ebenezer Scrooge story, but I can't say that I've ever seen it performed on a stage.
Well, we hope many Southwest Florida citizens will feel that way, because we are bringing it's a world premiere adaptation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it'll be a brand new telling of this story. I mean, the story will be the same, but there's a playwright, an actor named Mark Shanahan, who's worked with us a number of times, and he's written he is writing. He's in the process of writing. I'm looking forward to a new draft even this weekend. This really, really theatrical telling of the story. It'll be seven adults, I think. Ten adults plus seven young people. So we'll have children on the stage, plus I think even we're going to fill out the cast with even more young people. So, and they'll be playing principal roles as well. So as we talked about the education programs in the last half hour, we'll see a lot of those faces. The young people who have been through our education programs will, of course, audition for these roles. But we're going to compose music for it. It's not a musical per se, but there will be onstage musicians, a violin, a piano, and it's called A Christmas Carol, The Tale of Ebenezer Scrooge, and the version Mark is writing is very exciting, and it uses narrators, it uses very creative stagecraft and storytelling, so it'll be sort of a love letter to the Dickensian era and to the theater tricks of the time. So I think audiences are really in for an epic journey told in a very theatrical way, in a way that you can't see it any other place. It'll be something you can only experience on stage, something that the book can't do, and something that even a film can't do, because you'll be in the room with Ebenezer Scrooge and with the three spirits who visit him and Jacob Marley and all these things. And it'll be told in a very creative way. Mark Shanahan was in the Broadway company of the 39 Steps for the whole run. And so it'll be many actors playing – few actors playing many roles. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a love letter to what only what actors can do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And we've got the Rosemary Clooney story in Tenderly.
Mm-hmm. The last few years we have been saluting great American composers. We did a musical about Cole Porter this year. We did a Gershwin musical a few years before that, and Johnny Mercer. And this year, rather than doing another composer, it's going to take a shift, and we'll salute a great American singer, a great voice from the American Songbook, and that's Rosemary Clooney. And this is a new musical that is only a few years old, and it's two actors. One actress plays Rosemary, and another actor plays all of the various men, leading men in her life, and specifically her doctor. She sort of had a rebirth late in her career and became a jazz icon late in her career. But she had a breakdown sort of in the middle, and some issues with substance abuse and things like that, and mental illness. And this play takes a look at that, and it looks backwards, and it tells the story, her origin story. She was a little girl from from Kentucky and then became a household name in the 1950s. Yeah. And so it's just full of all of that wonderful, rich music. And we're it's a wonderful vehicle for an actress too. It's a wonderful role to play.
And I was delighted to see next season's also going to include August Wilson's Fences. You know, we were just speaking with folks from Theater Conspiracy not too long ago in this room about how there haven't been a lot of local productions that really explore, you know, the black experience in America in quite the way that an August Wilson production does. But they just did Seven Guitars mm-hmm. this year. So it's really great to see that coming to the Florida Rep as well.
Yeah, Fences is is part of August Wilson's American Century Cycle, yes, which yes. takes each decade of the 20th century and tells a different story about the African-American experience. And this is the one from the 1950s and is, I think, one of the best. It won the Pulitzer. It won a number of Tonys. And, you know, the film that just came out with Denzel Washington and Viola Davis makes it even more on people's minds right now. But we are so, so, so excited about telling this story and telling these characters' stories.
Right. Well, we are about out of time for today's conversation, and we had a few more we wanted to get to. But if you want to learn more about
it, very long winded.
Yeah, so that's all right. If you want to hear more about a Hay Fever or a Million Dollar Quartet, the musical, or the comedy Native Gardens, you can go to floridarep.org and see more about that. And this may be a bit premature, but if there's folks who really want to make sure they secure their tickets, is it too early to start buying tickets?
It is never too early to start buying tickets. So right now, we're actually selling subscriptions. So if you want season tickets, now's the time to do it. Packages for 6, 7, 8, and 9 shows. Those are available through the box office. And single tickets go on sale July 17th.
All right. Well, Jason Parrish, Interim Associate Director with the Florida Repertory Theater here in Fort Myers, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, John.
And Jason just finished his 13th season with the company. And you can find out more about the company's upcoming season online. Again, that's floridarep.org. Our show today is directed by Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Galligan. Today's edition of the program was produced by yours truly. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.